Hello and welcome to the Feverbee podcast. My name is Katie Kobe and I'm head of training here at Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Feverbee podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for free updates and review our show notes to get all of the resources mentioned in the podcast today. Show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. Today, I'm thrilled to announce that we have Blaise Grimes-Fior on the call with us. Blaise is an experienced community manager and social media strategist. His career in community management started in 2001, and since then, he's worked with global brands, startups, and charities in fields such as publishing, FMCG, fashion, gaming, social networking, pharmaceutical, broadcasting, and telecoms. Blaise was head of communities and social media for Hearst UK before joining eModeration as VP of Social Media Services. In his role, he oversees global community management, social media consultancy, social media training, and social listening services. He's also tasked with new service and product development. And finally, Blaise is also speaking at our upcoming Sprint conference in London on February 25th, so you should make sure to get your tickets now so that you can see him speak. So welcome, Blaise. I'm so excited to have you here with us today.
Thank you. So, I am very excited as well.
I'm glad to hear that. I feel having you on the podcast is really a special treat. You're someone that I've looked up to in the industry for such a long time, and so it's great to be able to chat with you and get to know you a bit better. But I thought today we would focus our conversation really on the concept of global community management, as you're one of the very few people out there who I think really gets community at a global context. So that's sort of how we're going to go ahead and structure our conversation. And to kick things off, how would you define the concept of global community management? Does it differ from the traditional community management that we're all used to? Is it just at a larger scale? What does that look like for you?
Well, it's an interesting question. I suppose there's two ways of interpreting the global and global community management. I mean, you can either look at it as meaning covering multiple channels, right? So If you're working across a forum and you're tasked with reaching out to a potential audience on social media, that could be seen as global because, you know, just the definition of the word global is encompassing the whole of something, right? Or is a group of things. Mm-hmm. Now, there's another way of looking at it. It could be global in the sense of aiming to encompass all touch points, and that could be both external, so social media networks and forums, or multiple departments, and that's where potentially global community management could cover, deploying your customer service team and social, for example, or your editors or any other function in the business which isn't inherently social, as in digital social. Mm-hmm. And instead of having a very large social team, you effectively empower other departments. But I think the way it's probably being used at the moment, and it's probably just easier to interpret, is around covering multiple territories and languages, really. So I think historically most companies have focused either on the English language because it's easy and it's reasonably common across the world, or, and I think this is quite interesting, it's probably the how marvelous the internet has been for humanity in the last 20 years, is the fact is 20 years ago very few companies had an element of, say, e-commerce, right? So the fact that you can now operate out of, you know, a shed in a small village in the middle of nowhere, and suddenly your market is no longer local, it can be global because you can sell on the internet. But in the process, You're not just selling to the English-speaking market, you might want to spread out to other countries or languages. And hence, in that sense, I think that's my interpretation of the word global.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. I think in my experience, it's mostly been the definition of covering multiple territories and languages. But I like what you said related to covering multiple channels, or really even to encompass all of those touch points. That's a really interesting way of looking at the role as well. So I guess it means that if you're exploring a global community manager position, you have to be very clear on what it is that you're actually going to be doing.
Well, I think it is basically a sort of exercise that you partake in, which is you effectively identifying all of the different nodes or spokes, you know, depending on the model you're looking at. And those could be social networks, I mean, particularly local social networks, such as, you know, say in China, you've got social networks that don't really exist or not even accessible outside of China. Mm-hmm. So as you approach the territorial global mindset, you then are faced with more technical decisions, such as which social network to go in, which tools to use. And as you scale up and are trying to build these interconnections between these nodes, then you might start leveraging other departments. So it's essentially building a mesh, I think.
Yeah, that's a very great way to look at it. Well, then with that in mind, I at least feel that I've seen a recent increase in different global community manager roles, like both on LinkedIn and Indeed and all the other job board places. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think companies are starting to, you know, recognize that there is a large amount of benefit in not ignoring their non-English speaking mm-hmm. markets. You know, I think some, particularly in the FMCG sector, some brands do have, you know, the product is sold in other countries under a different brand name. You know, but ultimately, and certainly from our experience as an agency, we found that a lot of brands have really struggled in the last few years around the fact that there is a sort of centralized view of how things should be done and how to control the view of the brands and the customer's interaction with the brands, and then what is actually happening in local territories, because there isn't necessarily that sense of, well, that sort of control mechanism between the central office and the office in Italy, for example. Mm-hmm. So I think in the process, you know, companies have realized that there is a benefit in supporting a level of centralization, and that is, there is also crucially very rapid learning that you can get via collaboration in between different territory activities. So I think in that sense, you know, the idea is to try and balance the nodes to have to be able to grow organically in their activity and still feel that sense of being able to adapt whatever they're doing to the local market. But at the same time, building a framework around that activity, which is, you know, the way things are done, or the best practices of how we engage with communities in this company, and also flushing the learning. So if something really great happens, or really good interaction, good outcome happens in one node, you can push it around all the other nodes and raise everyone's game, as it were, in the process. So I think it is really a, you know, a sign of that maturity in creating a bit more structure and a cohesion. You mm-hmm. know, businesses are seeing community management, and, you know, and I definitely believe, you know, and as people who've read my blog in the past know, I do believe there's a difference between social media management and community management, but in a sort of inherent structural way, it is the same to an mm-hmm. extent. So the same methods can apply. And I think in that sense, social media and community management are being seen with a more mature mindset. But in the process, that means a bit more centralization at a higher level, and more frameworks, more structure. You know, mm-hmm. and I think what Rich, the whole model of what Rich promotes in terms of his theoretical thinking is exactly that. You know, here are the best practices. You need to know why you're doing things. Don't just let people muck about and make it up as they go along. You know, mm-hmm. so in the process, you obviously need a stakeholder whose role is to promote that. That's okay. a really long-winded way of telling you why you need a global community manager.
No, that actually, it's perfect, because it piggybacks off onto another set of questions that I have related to being successful with this sort of a global experience and making sure that these types of global programs can be successful. You know, aside from the strategies and the frameworks in place, are there any other sort of pieces of wisdom or information that you have around what it takes to really be good at doing this on a global scale? I have my own ideas. One is, I do think that when you are going about a global community management strategy, it's so important to retain people that are native to the local cultures. Mm. And I think that that's not something that you can fake, in my opinion, is having someone from, you know, maybe the United States trying to manage and support and develop a community that is based in Italy or Japan. There's just so much context that you lose by not being a native to that local culture. But what do you think it really takes to be successful with these types of programs?
Well, I think just to cover your example just there, I think it can be downright dangerous, because, of course, you might not have local regulatory knowledge, particularly if you were working in the alcohol industry, roughly. You know, each country has its own regulatory system. But also you could just make the, you know, make yourself look really silly by trying to, you know, use expressions that don't translate or, you know, just behave in a way that culturally is not appropriate. So I think you're entirely right. I mean, having the benefit of, you know, people around you who really get that local culture, who can, you know, and we don't call it translation because I think sometimes translation is a bit firm. You know, we see it more as a localization process. You know, you translate and then think, does this work? You know, is it worthy of being, you know, is this form of engagement correct in this current environment? You know, rather than just a cold translation process. But I think, I mean, just going back to a person inhabiting this type of central role, you could argue it's almost not, you know, it's more of a strategic consultant role, and that it's not really about hands-on community management anymore. It's about structure building. I think either, you know, in a silly way, having travelled, you know, just being appreciative of other cultures, having been exposed to them, possibly knowing one more language at least, you know, but at the push that doesn't matter too much. But just there is a benefit in just that sort of cultural open-mindedness, I think. Really good negotiation skills. I mean, again, working with a lot of companies at the moment around how do we centralize their work and create a bit more framework. I mean, certainly the challenges we and they run in is you essentially need to negotiate buy-in from all of these stakeholders. You know, they need to want to use the framework and see the benefits of it, because essentially you're saying you're getting a bit less freedom now. You know, I want you to do it my way. So it's all of the community manager's negotiation skills that I think in a traditional community manager role are the inward focused ones, you know, negotiating with your own company, you know, the community want this, let's try and give them it, and so on and so forth. So I think it's a lot more of that and building that best practice framework, but then getting people to want to implement it, because you're not necessarily physically there to make them. That would be a solution. So it's sort of, you know, coming up with a really strong vision of the right way to do things, getting people to buy into that, and then, you know, looking, so obviously the challenge is the pushback, but I think a lot of it is going to be about face-to-face interaction. And I think, again, you know, community management for a lot of people is probably quite virtual. And I'm not suggesting some people who are community managers aren't good at face-to-face interaction, but this is basically at a business, you know, very high business level. You're negotiating with local, you know, an Italian brand manager, not with their community manager. So I think it requires that sort of senior, you know, confidence to deal with seniority.
That's a really good, some just very good traits, I think, to look at that are often overlooked. I took a global community manager role myself, actually, earlier last year, and didn't end up staying in it very long, but it's interesting in hearing what you've been saying about the qualities that are needed and what it takes to be successful, and reflecting back on my own personal experiences. I would absolutely agree that all of these, negotiation especially, is huge. And being able to have the confidence to go into business meetings with, you know, senior business leaders all over the world and to be able to talk to them about why it's important and what it's going to take for your particular programs to be successful are very important. And it is almost like a strategic consultant role. Like it's impossible to expect that you could handle all the tactical day-to-day requirements that are managed at that scale. And so you do have to look at it from a much more strategic level.
Absolutely. So, just out of curiosity, what was the one single thing you found most challenging in that role?
Oh my gosh. That's a great question. The thing that I found most challenging, in the particular situation that I was in, I didn't necessarily have enough resources to do what was needed. So we were trying to launch forums in multiple countries in multiple languages. And I really wanted dedicated community managers on the ground to be able to especially work with the content and make sure that things are being answered correctly and be able to you know, pass questions to the right people and to the right languages. And so what that was a big piece that I found to be really challenging was just not having the right resources to be able to execute it in the way that needed to be executed. Because we were operating in six different markets. So our forums, when we were launching them, it sort of became like we weren't just launching one forum that was being translated six ways. It's essentially you are launching six forums all at once. And so that part in terms of like trying to get all of the resources in place and making sure things were not just translated but localized. Like, if I say this phrase, does it make sense in Japanese? Does it still make sense to this market? That part of it I found to be challenging. And another part that I found to be challenging, at least for myself, is I did have some cultural experience with some of the countries that we were operating in, but others I didn't. And so when I was going online to try and do research about, you know, what is online behavior like in Germany versus what is online behavior like in Japan, I found it actually to be kind of challenging to find those cultural nuances. It was really hard to find any information online. So ultimately I took to like interviewing employees that were local to those markets as best as I could to find out, you know, how do you interact online? What do you think is important? And I learned a lot about concepts of, you know, reputation and respect and, you know, privacy and how important privacy is in Germany versus elsewhere in Europe. And, you know, whether or not someone in Japan will say something with their real name attached because they don't want it to affect their reputation. And a lot of those little nuances that I just don't think you can learn unless you're in the culture and you're in the country itself. So that was also another challenge, but really fun, at least to get to know my colleagues a little bit better in those different markets.
I think that illustrates it, doesn't it? You have to be, crucially, I think that's probably the biggest trait. You have to be able to recognize and leverage possibilities in the existing framework. Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, realistically, no one's going to give a new global community manager a load of resources. So they're going to have to be negotiating.
Yep.
You know, you're already on site doing this job. Can I just get 3 hours or 4 hours of your time per week, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to have to convince other, you know, again, it's that thing. It's a bit, I remember back at Hearst, you know, encouraging that company there, which was obviously just targeted to the UK, to get more involved with social media at the time. And it's the same challenges. You know, I'm talking to a load of people who already have a job and I'm telling them, let's do something in addition to that. Mm-hmm. And here, except you're doing it across multiple territories.
Yeah.
But it's yeah, all the challenges are quite similar, but I think it's just knowing that it has to go both ways, that you have to exude a level of confidence, a level of diplomacy, and it's not a passive role.
No, it's very much not. And it's interesting you bring in the word diplomacy. I have my degree in college was in international relations and foreign policy. And the classes that I took in diplomacy have found to be the most helpful in navigating different community roles, whether they're within one market or multiple markets. So that's a very interesting trait to bring up. So on that note then, I guess moving forward a little bit, let's talk a bit about volunteers and the roles that volunteers can play in these strategies. You know, volunteers really seem to be a key when we talk about scaling and ensuring local cultures, but I'm very curious to hear your take on what volunteers can do.
Sure. I mean, that's, you know, an admission. I haven't worked with volunteers in quite a few years now. So, but I think, again, you know, if we think on a theoretical level, whether they're volunteers or freelancers or even an agency, you know, really what we're talking about is people outside of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether we pay them or not, you know, we pay them in pin badges and CDs and fluffy toys, or we pay them in hard cash, you know, there is still a transaction. You know, we will give you status or stuff or money, and could you please do some of this work for me?
Yep.
So, I mean, I'll talk, you know, generally in terms of freelancers and my experience in the agency world.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's, you know, companies hire, I mean, it's quite an interesting concept, actually, that I'd just like to cover because it sets it a bit. I think what makes the more central element of this global framework work is often just a triangle of central tenets, right? You've got the best practice activity, so that could be the strategy, it could be the handbooks, it could be the moderation guidelines, it could be how to engage generally, you know, and stay on tone and so on and so forth. Often you need to support that with a common tool. I think one of the keys is having consistent reporting across all territories, and a common tool will help. And that's a whole other ball game in deploying it, you know, technically as well as getting people's buy-in, but that's very beneficial. And the third one is that resource, which we mentioned, and obviously from our experience, it's coming in as an agency and providing, you know, so these are the things that, whether it's volunteers or an agency or freelancers, you know, providing that local knowledge. So we have people based around the world and who can, you know, who are very cognizant of that local market and the local social media and community space, which, you know, industry, which is very different mm-hmm. depending on the market. They bring in really strong cultural understanding to make sure that we're not deploying, or the client is not deploying, something that's just going to not work or completely clash and offend, which mm-hmm. is obviously not a great thing from a brand perspective. And I think it's, you know, and again, this is without going into too much methodology, the way my brain works is I like segmenting things, which is very helpful for exactly this, is that you can segment out specific tasks to give them. And I think this is the same as using volunteers in general in mm-hmm. community settings, is you know, in my mind, you shouldn't get volunteers to moderate. But I mean, that's a philosophical position, but often people get moderators to moderate, or they get volunteers to host, you know, to encourage mm-hmm. conversation. So it's sort of, you look at very specific tasks, you write a little guide around it, you train people on it, and you ask them to do it. And obviously, the more enjoyable the task, the more likely people stick around to do it. Mm-hmm. When it comes to charging people for that work, it's much the same.
Right.
We work with the client to define our remits, what they will take care of, and then we create as much efficiency or creativity in our remits as possible. And then, of course, you know, volunteers or anyone, you know, working in an agency or freelance role can also offer that sort of out of hours capabilities. And I think that's the one thing we haven't touched upon, is, of course, if you're running communities in multiple time zones, their out of hours is not the same as your out of hours,
right,
and vice versa. So you've got challenges around making sure that there is coverage,
mm-hmm.
you know, for example. And actually, in the global model, that almost becomes easier, because, you know, you can use your US staff, can overlap, you know, your UK staff's out of hours, and then, you know, everyone goes to bed and the Australians wake up, and
yep.
you can create some good coverage models that way. But in the same way, you also end up with this system where you can't necessarily communicate effectively with them. So with mm-hmm. my US staff, really, I only have half a day of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So again, that's where those tools really come in, and where you could start, you know, it's beneficial to start building communication frameworks, whether that's using something like Basecamp or other socially activated tools, ensuring that people do meet up, do catch up, and talk about what they've achieved. And I think that's what I meant about flushing knowledge and learning around the system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you, as long as you make sure there is a management framework underlying all of this, then you will avoid people ending up going back into silos and segmenting themselves out. And I think volunteers, especially where potentially there is a lot of drop off, you need to really work at keeping them engaged, I think is even more important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I have a question now that I didn't actually send over to you earlier,
okay.
but related to tools, what tools do you think that, or maybe not that you think, but what tools have you found to be the most helpful in terms of managing and working with a global team? Like you'd mentioned Basecamp, but
mm-hmm.
You know, what other tools do you use to communicate or to keep yourselves on track?
Well, I suppose that, you know, I have to differentiate between tools that we use at eModeration mm. internally. So, I mean, I can, you know, tell you those. I mean, we use Basecamp. We do use the whole suite of Google apps
mm-hmm.
simply because, you know, it's this concept of an ecosystem. It allows for a lot more collaboration. One of the challenges of using disparate tools is obviously they don't interconnect very easily. So you end up with material duplicated. So in my view, the better tool is the one that tries and does everything reasonably well, rather than three or four that do things great. Some people would disagree with that, but I feel that if you can't, you know, report and validate on things, then you can't really study. And if you have nine tools with nine different reports and there's no way of aggregating them, then you don't really know what's going on.
Right.
But yeah, we use Yammer, which is a bit mm-hmm. more of a water cooler for us. You know, so mm-hmm. we've sort of built an infrastructure. I mean, we've built a couple of WordPress sites, sat on BuddyPress as well for very specific activities. We're hoping to start connecting them up together with that goal mm-hmm. of having one centralized database. You know.
Okay.
So that's the sort of how to support the team side. I suppose how to support the activity, it really depends whether you're managing forums or social media. I mean, things like, for example, Expion or Adobe Social from a social media perspective, you know, that to be honest, a lot of these tools now have collaboration functionality in them where you can assign mm-hmm. and discuss under a ticket system and so on and so forth. So I think it doesn't really matter. The key questions when evaluating community the community interaction tools is around, do they allow for collaboration?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the crucial. For example, someone posts a Japanese message in your English community. It's a lot easier just to tag it into your Japanese team rather than send them an email, get an email back. You know, it just gets a bit complicated.
Right.
And the other thing is
copying and pasting and losing things.
Yeah, and then it gets lost, and someone's using Outlook, and someone's using Google, and then suddenly everything's cut off. And it's just a mess. Yeah. The other thing is obviously how many languages does it support? And you know, there's a few tools that have good coverage, and again, most companies won't be looking at really obscure languages. But you know, if you're trying to deploy into a particular country and that tool doesn't have sort of very strong, for example, keyword filtering,
mm-hmm.
you know, suddenly you have to change your entire way of working because this one core function doesn't exist in that particular language. So I think for me, it's almost like sometimes it's better to have a tool that's a bit more basic if it can make you more efficient and more effective than have. And I think, you know, it's sort of along the lines of Rich's view of don't launch with all the bells and whistles.
Right.
It's kind of the same logic. You know, the really important things is, can you collaborate efficiently with it, and does it provide you with that language capability?
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, you know, most everything tools roughly just do the same.
Yeah, it's nice to have. Interesting. All right. Well, that's definitely some good tips there. So we're getting towards the end. What question should I have asked you on this topic that I didn't? I know it's hard to cover the concept of global community management in just a short 30 minutes, but is there anything that we missed discussing that you feel is really important to bring up at this point?
Well, I'd made a few notes on this, not many, don't worry. The first one is around resource, and you know, you did actually cover that, so I think I can scratch that one off. You know, I think we did touch upon the, you know, the complexities and the research required on how the local market actually impacts the implementation of the community strategy. So I think I can scratch that as well. But, you know, it is obviously very important to not just launch into Spain because, hey, it sounds good and we might sell some stuff in there.
Right. You know,
clearly, the Spanish market is completely different, and the Spanish community market is very different.
Yep.
So it's just, you know, it's really important to actually do that research.
And would you
right at the beginning?
Would you find that doing that research the best way is those, you know, in-person interviews?
It's one way. I mean, if you're lucky enough to find an on-site community expert, then you know, and I think that's just part of building one's network. You know, but I think in face-to-face definitely helps, because I think you can pick up all sorts of nuances that you can't pick up over the phone or certainly, but I would say email is just pointless because it's too time consuming to expand questions. And I think face to face is a bit more informal. You can ask questions that, you know, I don't know, that sort of come up as conversation progresses, and that maybe, you know, I just feel you can ask stupid questions face to face that you can't always ask by email. And usually it's the stupid questions that are really important.
Right, and they reveal so much more information.
Yeah. And, I mean, the last point is, you know, and I think it's something that I'd kind of experienced in the past, but, you know, especially at Hearst, because there were roughly 1,000 people in the organisation, and whilst I wasn't attempting to train 1,000 people, I was starting to grow, you know, went from just training 5 or 6 people to running workshops with 10 to 20. So it's got me thinking about how do you train people without ending up in workshops all the time. And then when I arrived at eModeration, you know, when I joined, the community management team was still quite small. I think it was about 10 to 20 people. And then now it's, you know, 100, 200 odds, I can't remember. I mean, it grows all the time. And now it's, you know, we're hiring in all sorts of territories and in different time zones. So the question I was faced was, how do I train continually? Because, of course, community management, like life, is about continuous learning.
Mm-hmm.
Without basically hiring trainers, which is high cost,
mm-hmm.
But also allowing people, without imposing timings on people. You know, people are busy. If you say, well, I'm going to run a workshop at this time, unfortunately, you're going to miss out on quite a lot of people because they're just not free.
Right.
So, I mean, without giving too much, because we are building this at the moment, so unfortunately, I can't go into too much detail on it, but really those are the questions. You know, so how do you build an infrastructure, technical or managerial, that allows for this continuous learning and knowledge sharing amongst the team? And that is probably the biggest challenge, particularly when it's spanning time zones and cultures, because of course you end up with a multicultural team.
Right.
You know, they don't all talk the same.
No.
they all offend at different levels, or excited at different levels, and you know, there's a lot of a balancing act to perform there as well.
Right. Well, it'll be really interesting to hear how you end up solving that problem.
Well, I'm hoping to touch on it at the Sprint Europe.
Ooh, that will be exciting. Something to look forward to then. Well, that just brings me then to my last question for the day. I like to ask my guests on the podcast, who would you like to hear from next on the show?
Sure. Well, I have heard that, so maybe it's easy to get hold of her, that Dawn Foster is actually hoping, or is, has moved to London to study for a PhD. So for those who don't know, she has just left a company called Puppet Labs. She's long-standing open source community manager.
Oh, great.
She's worked with Intel, with Jive, you know, great blog, great experience. And the really interesting thing is that I understand she's going to study for a PhD, or is hoping to, at the Center for Business Network Analysis around community metrics.
So
for those who love data, I think she's the person to talk to.
All right. That's a fantastic recommendation. I'm going to have to reach out to her. That'll be great. Well, Blaze, thank you so much for taking the time today on Community Manager Appreciation Day of all days. And really appreciate having you on the show. For everyone else out there, if you like this episode, make sure to visit communitygeek.com/podcast to review all of our show notes and all of the reference links. And Blaze, I'm looking very much forward to meeting you in person in London next month.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll talk soon.